Okay, we have Jack Antonoff on the line. First of all, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks
You're a
for having
busy
me.
guy, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
So, a couple of important dates coming up. You have the self-titled album, March 8th, and then you're playing a show here in Colorado. You're going to be at Red Rocks on May 20th.
And I cannot wait for that.
Okay, yeah. I was going to ask you about Red Rocks. When you play there, does it feel different? A lot of people talk about how it's, a special place with a special kind of energy. Does it feel
Thousand
different?
percent different.
Yeah.
1000% unlike any other show.
Does it feel like a sports analogy? Is it more like a playoff game as opposed to a regular season game?
Well,
Anything like
it's
that?
not, I mean, every show feels like the last night on earth for me, but just the layout of that venue. I mean, there's not really many other venues where the band is at sort of the bottom, and then the crowd goes up from there. So the energy is entirely different. I mean, even just like the sheer sound and view of the crowd feels entirely different. So it's just quite literally the landscape of it is so unlike any other venue that you can't help but being swept away by that.
Yeah, it is one venue that I've been to as a spectator. When you get there a little bit late, you're kind of stuck in the back. Being at the back and seeing the view of the city and everything, it's almost like the seats up higher are better. Yeah, it really is.
There isn't, I mean, it sounds absurdly cliche, but there's not a bad seat in the house. And it's also like, you as the band gets bigger, we're so obsessively trying to make sure that wherever we play, it feels like it always feels like a club. And Red Rocks is one of these rare places where you have 9,000 people there and everyone's right there. There's no, like, kind of what we were just saying, there's no bad zone ever. I just get really obsessive. I love shows so much, and I just want to make sure every seat is a special seat, and there's no part of a venue that sucks to be in. And so, like I said, you feel that energy. Everyone's so happy to be there.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. May 20th once again at Red Rocks. The producer that you are, I'm going to use the S word, the super producer. So I think that started with Taylor Swift, right? And then Lorde, and then Lana Del Rey. Where do all of the superstars fall in order, and how do you get into that club? How does that begin?
I don't know. I'm thinking about it a lot recently because I've just had my head down working so hard for so long. And just recently, I've just started to just even take a glimpse back and just think what a strange and thrilling decade it's been. But I don't know. I don't know. It's so funny because the studio is such a solitary, tiny, tiny place compared to the reach of a lot of this music. And so I just kind of stay there. And then I don't know. A lot of it, honestly, as you can tell by my stuttering, it's not something I have like a real sense about. I go in every day and just feel very proud of the things I'm making.
Yeah, I remember really sitting down once and going through the resume and just kind of being blown away with all these names. But that does make sense when you're in the studio, when you're dedicated to your craft, this solitary work, like you're saying, that does make sense.
It's a little bit like the amount of people that hear things, the magnitude of the releases, who I'm working with, all these things, they don't really come into play in the room because what we're doing is just so beyond that. You were trying to capture something that is really true and really emotional. So it just doesn't feel like thinking about the magnitude of some of this stuff, it feels irrelevant in a way compared to what we're trying to make.
Yeah, I mean, the list of names you've worked with, incredibly impressive. Are there any artists you haven't worked with yet that you'd like to team up with at some point?
It's a really interesting question. I've gotten the question a lot, and the thing that it's made me realize as I've pondered it is what really makes me excited to work with someone is when I know them. And then when I'm in a conversation with them about where things are going. And so the truth is, there's not really anyone I want to work with because I don't fantasize about working with someone unless I'm sort of in this intense conversation about the future. So it's you know, like anyone else out there that I don't know, I'm just kind of a fan and just love their work, but I don't ever really insert myself and think, oh, I would love to work with them. I just stay really focused on this, you know, people in my small little crew.
Yeah, that's cool to hear. You're not for sale. You need that connection to
yeah, and to so you know, and someone. I never know where it's going to come from. I mean, I never know, you know, I don't when I meet someone new and then start discussing possibly working together, it's such a future conversation. It's so about something that hasn't happened yet that it just feels almost impossible to, you know, imagine, oh, this is who I'd want to work with or anything like that.
The artists that you work with, I mean, they obviously get something from you. Do you take away anything from those partnerships? Does your songwriting process change? Do you incorporate new ideas to your own music?
Oh, endless. I mean, I am in such a give and take with my community, and I'm just always endlessly inspired by people's vulnerability, people's dedication to breaking new ground, drilling further into ideas. Yeah, I mean, I endlessly, every day.
So when you come up with an idea for a new song, how do you know when and where it's best to use it? Like, this is a song that would sound great with Bleachers. This is something that I can use with one of the artists that I'm producing songs for. How do you know where to take it and when and how to use it?
Everything happens in real time. You know, it's not, there's not, you know, so it's like I'm with people and then we're working on things and they just reveal themselves very clearly what they are. You know, so you know, the inception of ideas, whether I'm making my records or I'm working with someone else, you know, there's not a lot of like stockpiling of things that then get, you know, kicked this way or that way. Like everything's just, you know, you grab a little lightning in a bottle, then you protect it, and then you figure out how to finish it. But, you know, there's not like a bank of things that get kicked around. It's more just things happen in a moment, and then that's where those things live. And then it's all about finding the way to, you know, put them in the best outfit.
So I was reading about your early career, and I do want to ask you about Outline, the punk band you were in with the high school years. I think, what, ages 14 to 18? Does that sound about right? So you booked your own shows in that band. You toured in a minivan. A lot of music fans have read the book, Our Band Could Be Your Life. That's what I was thinking of when I'm reading about this. It seemed like you lived that for a while. And I did see a quote from you. It said you fell in love with touring when you were in that band. Or was that quote accurate?
Completely. I mean, okay. The love of touring is so separate from the love of music.
Okay.
Just because it's a lifestyle, you know, you can love music, you love the studio, you can love playing live, love songwriting, love producing, recording, all these things. But the lifestyle of touring is a very separate thing. That is, you know, 22 hours of the day, you're not playing music and you're in a very strange lifestyle. And it is not for everyone. I fell in love with that completely separately of music. They're two totally separate things. And I think that's why we see so many artists who, you know, love making music, but hate touring or whatever it is. And I'm just, I feel lucky, but I just fell in love with that looseness of being away, the forward motion of driving places, leaving your problems behind you. And at a very young age, I just fell in love with that escapism.
Yeah, it seems like if you can fall in love with that kind of touring, you're going to be okay in the future when things sort
well,
of...
Well, they're just separate things. You know, you're the career, the work of being an artist and the work of living a life on the road, they're not connected. You know, the need to express yourself through writing songs and recording them and even playing live and connecting with people, that doesn't go hand in hand with living at hotels and truck stops and whatnot. And I think we wrap it up as one thing. So then a lot of people find themselves feeling really dissonant and freaked out by all of it. But I just sort of separately love both.
Yeah, and the music videos of my youth, I mean, I'd see Bon Jovi, you know, Motley Crue on the road, you know, they have private jets, fancy hotels, you know, cute girls hanging around. It seems pretty awesome. But then you read about working bands, those indie bands that I was talking about in the book, Our Band Could Be Your Life, working musicians. It seems like it can definitely be a grind. If someone's just starting out and going on the road, what's the best advice you would give them when it comes to touring? Things to do, things to avoid, stuff like that.
To me, the big thing with touring is it's just to, you got to find your community. You know, it's so lonely if you don't have your people. You know, you have to love the people you're doing it with. You got to just love the people you're doing it with. And if you don't have that, then you might be doing it with the wrong people, because it's weird and it's hard and it's beautiful. And you know, you just have to have that community around you. That's what supports you. That's what can make it a beautiful thing or a stressful thing. It's a bit like the cliches people say about marriage. It's like, if you got problems before you're on tour, just wait till you get on tour. So you just got to make sure that that's, you know, you're with your people. And that's what being in a band is. That's what having an artistic community is you just got to find your people.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at how long bands can stay together when you have, you know, creative people like that with ideas about music. And, you know, I've heard people say, you just mentioned marriage. It's like being in a marriage with, you know, three other people, four other people, and you all,
yeah.
It's hard enough one-on-one, but then when you add three, four, five people into the mix, does that sound accurate?
It's exactly right. And it's a real, it's just a crazy, crazy heightened space to be in. And if at its worst, it can cause turmoil and insanity and dissonance, but at its best, it can be an experience that really like is singular and brings you, creates a family, really. I mean, that's my family, you know, the people I tour with.
Okay, really, just one more question here for Jack Antonoff. I'm always interested to know, it's kind of a generic question, but I'm always interested to know what artists, bands, genres, records help to flip the switch in you when you were young. I've used the wet cement analogy. When we're younger, our brains are wet cement, and there are things that can just leave handprints in there that are just there forever. So were there any records or bands that left those handprints that are still there today?
I mean, too many to go through, but the first thing that comes to mind was when I was a kid, I went from writing music and playing music and playing all these instruments in my home to discovering when I was about 13, 14, this local scene in New Jersey, and that changed my life. That's that community I'm talking about. That's when I saw people who lived music beyond just something they liked to do, whose music was their life. That's when I experienced bands touring through and seeing what a touring band looked like and how what it felt like. So that's the real turning point in my life, is when I experienced my own local scene. Changed everything for me.
So the DIY, just seeing people actually doing it and knowing you could do it yourself, really empowered you.
That example of this can be a life. You know, it's not just a guidance counselor telling you to find a plan B. Like, this can be a life. There's people out here and there's support systems, and you know, if you find your people, you can support each other.
Yeah. No, it's cool to hear that about how your local scene influenced you like that. And
yeah.
And here we are all these years later. So okay, thank you so much for your time. Jack Antonoff, Bleachers, the album coming out March 8th, and a show at Red Rocks. Looking forward to seeing you here in Colorado May 20th. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much. Lovely to talk to you. Bye, guys.